back with episode 559 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I promise, no casting news. Oh, sorry, just kidding.
And this is Bronstone from Australia, and I'd suggest a drinking game where it's every time the news is about Netflix or superheroes, you have a drink, but no, we'd kill more people than Withnell and I that way.
I don't know. There are other shows that have fairly substantial drinking games. I don't know that we do much worse than that, but we'll let the, you know, we'll let them slide for this hour, I suppose. All right. Well, if you can't tell by the tone of my voice, I am a little bit under the weather. So if I have to cut in and out, this is for both the listeners and my co-hosts. If I have to cut out now and then, you'll know it's because I don't want to hack on the microphone. But in the meanwhile, we are going to be talking about some news items this week, and of course there will be the usual casting and such. But before we do that, Edmund, there's our brand spanking new disclaimer for news that we're still figuring out.
Yes, just to let you know that if you haven't been keeping up with the news, we are going to do that for you. So if you really want to dig it up yourself and don't want to be spoiled about all the wonderful things happening around the genre and the industry, we'll see you next show, I guess.
That's right, and let's go ahead and start with the first item here, which is, well, it's related to a show on Netflix, drink. this one, however, is a little different than what we've been used to lately. Netflix has announced a new animated TV series based on How to Train Your Dragon film series. That's right, the series DreamWorks Dragons Race to the Edge sees Hiccup and Toothless exploring new worlds in search of never-before-seen dragons and trying to end the war between Vikings and dragons for good. All I see here is that maybe made this up a little bit with Thor and Asgard and the whole, you know, nine worlds, and we've got something going here.
Wasn't there already a How to Train Your Dragon TV series?
I thought there was.
Like currently?
Yeah, I thought so, but maybe I was mistaken. But I guess now it'll be another one? An official one? I don't know.
Well, I doubt there would be an unofficial one.
Well, I mean, just like a spinoff. I'm wondering now, are they going to create like a shared universe for How to Train Your Dragon movies and TV shows?
The How to Train Your Dragon cinematic universe.
That's right. Everything has to be one now. Don't you know that?
Yes. DreamWorks was feeling left out, so.
Understandably.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if someone set up to do like a multiverse. Like, Disney's finally going to buy the rights to X-Men or something, and rather than try and fold it all in. It's just like, no, there'll be separate universes, but part of the same multiverse universe. And something weird like that.
I buy it.
How far can...
It really isn't that kind of what people hope they do with DC and every single TV show that is unrelated to one another. But anyway, we'll get to that soon enough, I'm sure. All right, next, please. I believe the next one is yours, Bronstone.
It is. However, unfortunately, my computer is very, very slow. Who do we have? Brian Singer, the director of the upcoming X-Men Apocalypse, went on Twitter to reveal that Olivia Munn has been cast in the role of Psylocke, otherwise known as Betsy Braddock, who is apparently a popular X-Men. I'm not familiar enough with the X-Men comics.
Very
popular. Okay, I'll take that. So that's sort of the latest big casting news. I'm happy to see Olivia Munn in things in general.
If she's in that costume, I'm sure we'll all be very happy to see her, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, but her role in Newsroom, she went up a lot of notches in my opinion on that show. So I'd be happy to see her in something else.
Indeed. How about you, Edmund? What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, no, I'm not familiar with the character from the books, since I wasn't really following them at that, they're saying here, early 90s popularity of it. But yeah, certainly I'll just echo what Bronstone said. I mean, that Olivia Munn just killed it in the Newsroom, and still notable for me for being I'm pretty sure the only actor in history to be told that they talked too fast for Aaron Sorkin dialogue. So definitely looking forward to seeing what she can do here.
Well, you know, it was because she was on Attack of the Show, and to keep the attention of millennials in their short attention spans, I guess she had to talk fast.
Yes.
Isn't that it? Really? No? Okay. So Psylocke, what to say about her? Here's the background on this character. She started out as a prim British woman, the sister to Captain Britain, in fact, in the UK Marvel UK comic series written by, I believe, Claremont and Alan Davis was the artist. I forget if Claremont wrote the book or not. Regardless, she was a very, very, very upper-class British woman with purple hair and telekinesis powers. And then at some point in the early 90s, I believe, Chris Claremont decided that he was tired of using the character in that particular form in the X-Men comic and decided that she should be somehow changed and transposed into the body of a really sexy Asian woman with ninja skills. Hence, I suppose, the popularity dramatically increasing, I'm guessing. But yeah, I don't know if it was just him doing something along the lines of how he tried to sex up Kitty Pryde later on in life, but yeah, that's kind of what she's known for, is for being a British telepath, telekinetic, whose mind has been transplanted into the body of an Asian ninja woman with, like, psychic swords and such. Hence the image in the article. Yeah. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Olivia Munn, perhaps a good choice for this, at least in terms of the newer incarnation. Okay, so we have some news here that was kind of a turmoil this week, particularly for those of Wonder Woman fandom, anyway. Boy, you can just imagine some of the responses to this article in some certain areas of the interwebs. Wonder Woman lost its director earlier this week over creative differences.
Mm.
Michelle McLaren had left the Wonder Woman movie, and at first it seemed like there wasn't a whole lot of explanation as to why. However, since then it's come out, and this is interesting to me, that, quote-unquote, Warner Brothers wanted a more character-driven story that is light on action. McLaren's desire for an epic origin tale along the lines of Game of Thrones was the reason she parted with the studio. Who saw that coming? I would have thought it went the other way around, right? I mean,
yeah, but I mean, it's the Wonder Woman film project. Have they ever been able to keep anyone on that for any length of time? I mean, wasn't the classic thing, like, back in the mid-2000s, was that DC Warner Brothers wanted to have a new movie out with one of the big three every every year. So 2005 was Batman Begins, and 2006 was Superman Returns, and 2007 was supposed to be the Joss Whedon Wonder Woman movie. And yeah, between Joss being unable to get along with the studio and Superman Returns not doing so well, it all kind of died in the butt, and the Batman ones were the only ones that could kind of keep it going.
Yeah, and now we see them basically trying this again, and, well, this is what they're doing with it. I don't know. But I guess there's some hope, because there were some people who were angry at the idea that a female director for Wonder Woman would suddenly get replaced with some, you know, evil male director. But Edmund, that doesn't seem to be the case. Nor did they let this one die on the vine very quickly.
No. I was certainly disappointed, because Michelle McLaren had done some amazing work in on Breaking Bad. Interestingly, I mean, yes, it was some of their more tense and action-packed episodes. So it's no surprise that she wanted to go big with her feature film debut. I believe it was going to be her debut. But
It would have been. But before you go on, I do want to address that for a second. Game of Thrones, not exactly a show that is unknown for mixing character and action given episode, right? I mean,
absolutely. I mean, not to mention Breaking Bad as well. I mean, yes, they were action-packed episodes, but also
you mentioned saying that she directed some Breaking Bad episodes is seriously doing misjustice. She directed some of the big ones on Breaking Bad. The one that jumps to mind, what I think back to is Alan Taylor, who went from directing Game of Thrones and a lot of other TV shows to doing Thor: The Dark World. And however you feel about that movie, you can't deny that it's got some great action and it looks gorgeous.
Yep. And actually, mentioning Thor: The Dark World does make for the perfect segue, since the announcement of Michelle McLaren's replacement was that, in fact, Patty Jenkins is now set to helm the picture, provided she stays with it. She also had a run-in where she was the original director of Thor: The Dark World, and before she dropped out for, yes, creative differences. She also directed Monster, the Charlize Theron Oscar-winning film, and has done various stuff on TV, so yeah, I mean, given the history of this project, we will just have to keep our fingers crossed that they are actually set to go now.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see. I mean, certainly they moved very quickly to replace McLaren, and I believe that's because the last thing they want to do is change the release date of any of their films.
Yes.
That would be my guess. Bronstone, why don't you go ahead and take these next one, two, whatever this happens to be.
Yeah, it was a relatively small bit of news that wound up in our news list a couple of times. But so season 3 of Orange is the New Black hasn't been released on Netflix yet. However, Netflix has just confirmed that the show has been renewed for a fourth season, which will air sometime in 2016. That's kind of the long and the short of it. It's definitely one of the more popular shows, the more popular original Netflix programming. I personally haven't started watching beyond the first episode. It's on the list, I promise. But yeah, so good news if you're a fan of that show.
That's true. Edmund, do you watch this one by any chance? Not like we have a whole lot of time for this kind of stuff, but it is fairly popular.
Yeah, I know it is, but I have still never gotten into it, so...
Well, that's okay, because apparently even if you're a show that nobody gets into, you may still have a life after you've been canceled. And Edmund, I believe you have a little news about that.
Certainly. For the few people who did hang on to the end of Revolution Season 2, the story will be continuing in comic book form, naturally, from DC, given Warner Brother roots here, and... it is apparently going to be the entire creative team behind the series, Eric Kripke, Abrams, Rodney O'Bannon, John Favreau, are going to create a special four-chapter, a digital comic book, with DC. So they are so confident that they want to save on printing, I guess. Yeah, I'm just trying to see the other. They aren't really telling us exactly what they're going to be tying up and revealing. As I say, for those who actually are interested in how Revolution might have wound up or continued, this will be your chance.
Yes, from what I understand, when they said, "Well, what are you going to wrap up in this, you know, 4-issue digital comic book or whatever?" they said all of it. That might just tell you how thin that show was.
Yes.
Just saying. Okay, what do we have next? I believe it's me. Okay. Well, we've said before that there seems to be this dearth of new inspiration for TV shows. We've also mentioned many times that NBC is scrambling for anything that they can do.
Mm-hmm.
This may be evidence of that. Last season, Emerald City was basically canceled after the pilot was put out, or rather, it had been given a straight-to-series order, and then before it even started, it was canceled. Well, guess what? NBC has gone back to the well and has reordered 10 episodes of the show. I'm not sure how this is supposed to work, because what it sounds like to me is that so they went straight to series, canceled it before it ever got started, have now gone back to straight-to-series again. Is this Schrodinger's TV show? That's what I want to know. What was really irritating here is that at the same time, we don't know the fate of Constantine.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that this would be even close to a suitable replacement for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are your thoughts, Bronstum, on this? Do you have any thoughts on this? Do we want to know your thoughts on this?
I've got nothing. Yeah, like this is of so little interest to me that I just don't have the words for it.
Yeah, I don't know who they think their audience would be for this. But boy, talk about retreading something that's been done a million times. I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that it would be bad, but it certainly doesn't give me much hope that they scrapped it once already and now they're going to bring it back. Okay. If it wasn't good enough to commit to what you were doing before, why are you going to do it again? Unless, again, this was something that they kind of had in their hip pocket for just in case down the road. And that's they figured that they had enough already to try to spool out the season. And that's why they didn't go with it. But boy, they're really kind of leaving us with no information or reasoning at all. Anyway.
Yeah.
this is where we're at, folks. This is where NBC is at, rather, I should say. We've got plenty of other things to watch. And we will. I can promise you that.
Yes.
All right. And the next one is you, Edmund.
Yes. And speaking of something everybody else decided to watch instead of NBC, the numbers are in for the season 5 premiere of Game of Thrones, which happened to be the most watched Game of Thrones episode ever. With 8 million people, and that beat last season's premiere by over a million. I'm just checking here if, I guess that is coming from Nielsen, so I presume that is the live numbers, and I would be rather interested to see what the live plus 3 or live plus 7 DVR numbers are, because I'm sure it will only climb from that.
Well, yeah, that's the important part, right, is that these are just the overnights, from what I understand. Yeah. And you, for one thing, I know that for a while that Live Plus 7 was actually gaining some traction, but it seems like now Live Plus 3 is the kind of DVR on-demand gold standard.
Yeah.
They don't really want to open it up to an entire week, it seems. Fair enough. But I can't wait to see what those numbers are like. Absolutely, they're going to blow you know, everything else out of the water. What's amazing to me is that this is yet another show like The Walking Dead that gains millions of viewers every new premiere and continues to be at the very top of the pirated list every week. So you can just imagine if this was on like network television, just how huge the numbers would be.
Indeed.
Yes. Yeah, so we're just burning through the news this time. All right. Bronstam, if you don't mind.
Alrighty. I'm trying to see why we're burning through the news, because none of it is particularly substantial.
Well, yeah, last week was a lot better. Sorry.
Well, Ryan Gosling is in negotiations to star in the Blade Runner sequel. Ridley Scott has been talking about getting a sequel to Blade Runner off the ground. He'd be the executive producer. The script would be co-written by one of the guys who wrote the original screenplay, the first room. Harrison Ford is supposed to come back, and apparently there's a chance Ryan Gosling might be in it. That's it. That's the news. A guy might be in a movie.
What's your thoughts on this Blade Runner sequel?
It just seems so... It seems unnecessary. Like, you get to the end of Blade Runner, and yeah, there's questions. There's things that you'd like to see sort of more of and find out more, stuff like that, but the whole point of the movie is is being left on that note of ambiguity. I feel like coming back to it to that story it's a mistake. It's not going to give us anything satisfactory.
I have a theory. Not that it's a demon, but I have a theory that Ridley Scott ran out of footage from the original filming to do yet another super duper director's cut of Blade Runner and needs more footage. That's why he's doing a sequel. It's possible. It's probably a better explanation than he gives for why there needs to be a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I'm with you guys. I can't really see the reason for it, but the part that still keeps intriguing me is this whole thing of saying, okay, so Harrison Ford is in it. It's picking up several decades afterwards. So what's all this stuff about, you know, the multiple permutations and finally what I consider the silliness of Deckard actually being a replicant? How can he still be alive several decades later? Unless he's some sort of strange super replicant. I don't know.
That's it. You nailed it. Plot spoilers, the whole movie. You just spoiled the whole, damn it.
Yes.
All right.
No, it's no point going now.
No, you know what? No, you shouldn't go and see it in a movie theater. I don't know what the functional equivalent of HBO would be down in Australia, but much like many of us in the 80s who saw the movie a million times on HBO,
yes.
I'm waiting for it to come out on HBO, and then I'll watch it. It's just, you got to. It's like tradition now. All right, Edmund, they're talking about maybe something a little bit new. I know it's inspired by something else, but
yes,
maybe something new.
But yes, we actually, something new and original, we have some casting news. But this is for the adaptation of Preacher, which is coming to AMC, and they have found their leading man, apparently. Dominic Cooper will play Jesse Custer. Of course, seen most recently playing Howard Stark again in Agent Carter, which unfortunately we don't have any news on for you this week, maybe next week. And yeah, it's been rumored for weeks, but Seth Rogen himself did tweet it out. That seems to be all the rage these days, to tweet these announcements. So that is official. Yeah, there was actually some of the other casting news here, which I hadn't been aware of, but Ruth Negga will apparently finally get to, I presume, get out of her inhuman makeup, and will be playing Custer's fiery girlfriend, Tulip. And they also, just as we were going to air, announced that also Elizabeth Perkins has joined the cast as Jesse's mother, although apparently they have changed her name from the source material, so who knows what's going on there, but she will now be Viola Quincannon rather than Christina Custer, so.
Okay, that's an interesting change, I suppose, yes. But there we are. I'm not sure why they would do that, but all right, whatever works. Okay, let's see here. Bronstom, the penultimate article here.
Alrighty. So, Warner Brothers has been, they've been putting together the DC Cinematic Universe. There's a Green Lantern movie scheduled for 2020. But reportedly, Warner Brothers have decided not to recast the role of Hal Jordan. Apparently they're planning on having it be anything to do with that god-awful Ryan Reynolds movie. But no, instead it looks like they're going to use Jon Stewart as the as the Green Lantern of the title. And I know some people listening are probably not that familiar with Green Lantern. No, this isn't a Daily Show crossover.
No.
Jon Stewart has been around since the 1970s as another member of the Green Lantern Corps. And he's had his own title. Apparently, he was the main Green Lantern character they used in some of the animated series, and is by all accounts quite popular. He's the character that a lot of people on a lot of Arrow fans have sort of been hoping that Diggle would turn out to be, and I'm kind of one of them because that would be awesome. that's the talk. It's that Jon Stewart will be the Green Lantern for the Justice League Green Lantern movie that's coming up. It's kind of notable in the fact that Stewart is an African American character, and it would help diversify the DC cast, because one of the few complaints people have had about Marvel's big cinematic universe so far is not that many people of color, and not that many major female roles, which I suppose is why the Wonder Woman movie would be so important for DC. But I guess if you're a big fan of Jon Stewart, it's a good news. If you're still reeling from the Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern movie, I suppose it's good news as well. There's no chance that they'll be revisiting that, apparently.
What would a Green Lantern movie with Jon Stewart from The Daily Show look like? That's what I'm now considering. Like
he'd be wearing some sort of domino mask and sitting behind a glowing green table.
Yeah, I think it would just be him basically acerbically just ripping into the enemy and them just feeling really, really bad about it. But
no, he'd be using the ring to literally punch the crap out of Bill O'Reilly rather than just doing it with words.
Now I'm wishing this was true. Thank you. You know, anyway. All right, well, we have one more here that could be of great interest, as we are potentially following up on that news article from last week about there being a spinoff of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Here we go again, where ABC is looking at a potential new superhero television project within the Marvel universe, this time working with the Oscar-winning writer and producer of 12 Years a Slave, John Ridley. No details are available at this point, other than the fact that they are working together, and it involves reinventing a hero from Marvel's stable of characters. Now, this particular article seems to debunk the idea that it is the same show as the rumored Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. spinoff. What that would mean would be, potentially three different shows in the Marvel Cinematic Universe on ABC in the next season sometime, somewhere. Now, what I would question is this going to potentially be one of these mid-season replacements? That's what is always a big question mark. Where do things fall? What's going to be the major show for the season versus the miniseries in between halves of a season? What do you think, Edmund? Are they expanding too fast, or is this pretty much what they ought to be doing, since ABC is kind of turning into their, PR saturation for the Marvel Cinematic Universe anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with them with this sort of corporate synergy, and certainly with the quality of the material they're putting out. I know, yes, we had some people who were not that high on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and have maybe not made their way back now that it has been getting better and better. Everything being kept under wraps, I mean, it's kind of hard to say if it, my instinct would be they would, given the fact we're already in April, they'd be pushing more for something in the new year and mid-season, but it might just be a case of them keeping everything secret, and there's more work going on behind the scenes than they're letting on. I'm John Ridley, of course. I mean, he has been executive producing American Crime, so has been kind of busy with that, but certainly he's got quite a few irons in the fire, taking advantage of his that Oscar-winning run with 12 Years a Slave, and so I've been quite interested to see what he could come up with.
Yeah, they might even go the route of having like two half seasons, so to speak, like two different shows with 13 episodes or something like that. You never know how they want to mix things up. I mean, other than the Shonda Rhimes cinematic universe, I don't know what else they have on ABC that's really pressing, I guess, or really highly visible.
Yeah, and that seems to be about the only thing that's really taking off, because I know Revenge, I know, has taken quite a tumble, which had been generating lots of buzz in its early seasons. Once Upon a Time is safe, of course, because of the Disney connection, but I wouldn't inflict that on anybody unless they were a huge enemy at this point.
There are still people that really love it,
Yes, I know.
I know why, but...
Also, how likely is your mortal enemy supposed to... Hey, look, buddy, I know we hate each other. And, there was that whole thing where we were sword fighting above an active volcano. But just aside from all that, you got to trust me, you should watch this show. Yeah. I mean, you'll like it. Just stick with it.
No, I think you definitely need to go the reverse psychology route. It's like, the absolute worst show you could ever watch.
No, it's not for you. It's not for you.
Yeah.
And that's how Lex Luthor was defeated. Yeah, I don't know. It seems like more along the lines of, this is what you do to your enemy. You strap him into a chair and force his eyelids open and make him watch this. And so he eventually cracks and just defers to your greater wisdom. That's got to be the way it works, right? All right. Well, uh-oh. What happened there? Was that me?
No. I'm still hearing you.
Is Bronslum still there? I guess not. Well, while we figure this one out, let's go ahead and take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Well, he tried to get in touch with us here. All right, well, while we are... we're waiting for Skype to be nice to Bronstum. I guess, Edmund, there were a couple trailers that came out this week. I don't know if you got a chance to see them or not.
Well, I did see little spacey one.
Oh, the little spacey one.
Yes, and I don't mean Kevin.
No, Bronstum, are you back? He's right there on the screen.
I am indeed.
Oh, there he is. Okay, so to kind of round out this particular episode, I wanted to see what people thought of the couple of major trailers that were kind of released this week. And the first one that I guess we can talk about, since Edmund actually saw it, would be the latest Star Wars The Force Awakens trailer. So, Bronstum, what are your thoughts or reactions to this?
To the Star Wars trailer?
Yeah.
My response to it was basically been on Facebook and whatnot to repost that video that someone cut together of Matthew McConaughey watching the trailer and just say, yeah, this was me. if you haven't seen that video, it's kind of amazing. But yeah, no, this was it's still a teaser. Like, oh, yeah. It's still not giving us a lot that's concrete, but it's kind of confirming that no, main characters in the original trilogy will be back in some capacity. Apparently Chewie is a member of the Hair Club for Wookiees. It had a sense of adventure and of action, and it gave us a it put a bit of focus on who some of these new characters are. You've got a hotshot pilot, you've got a reformed stormtrooper, you've got this this character who looks like a bit reminds me a bit of Ben Kenobi at the beginning of the original film. Just that sort of like, yeah, living on my own, just sort of not doing much until. You know, stuff hits the fan. The CGI and stuff looks great, but it's not overwhelming the practical effects and whatnot that are going on. Everyone and their pet dog was very, very quick to confirm that no, the cute rolling robot is actually a real thing. Like, it's a real prop. It's not CGI. It's nothing like that. It actually rolls around. And I expect it'll be, you know, on sale by Christmas.
Yes, of course.
it looked really solid. It got me very excited for what's coming up in this franchise, and I was I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I guess what was funny to me was that there were people who were stunned and shocked at the lack of lens flare. But besides that point, no. You know that I say that yes. With great reluctance.
Okay,
but.
Okay, anyone who still complains about the goddamn lens flare in the Star Trek movies, go and watch Chris Hadfield's Space Oddity video, all right? Actually filmed in space, and there's just lens flare a go-go, so shut the hell up!
Okay.
I'm so pissed.
Snow over it, right? Yeah. It is a stupid thing to complain about. Yes. However, I do think now that his inevitable biofilm needs to be titled Lens Flare a Go-Go, just because. Because that's the most awesome title ever. That's episode 8 right there. Just to really piss some people off. Travis Donovan, I'm thinking of you. So Edmund, how about your reaction to... I mean, I know we're not seeing a whole lot here, but I keep looking for something that's going to really like make me think, oh boy, here we go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, certainly.
Hype, it's never going to live up to the hype, but I just keep looking at it and going, what I see so far... Yeah, it's solid. It's kind of what I expected Abrams to do with Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly. And certainly compared to the Star Trek experience and doing the whole reboot and new timeline. I mean, certainly the return of the original characters, certainly warms my heart. I've always said I was literally the target audience for the first Star Wars, being a 13-year-old science fiction fan sitting in a Saturday matinee, having since I actually was up in Canada at the time and had missed what little hype there was, because of course, you know, when before Star Wars came out, nobody was expecting anything like that. So certainly having Mark Hamill doing his narration and Han and Chewie showing up at the end was definitely making me feel very, very good about this project, and everything we've seen so far certainly to me indicates that this is Abrams certainly not in revisionism mode, but in let's bring this back to what made it so fabulous in the beginning. So I'm feeling very, very optimistic and hopeful now.
Yeah, I don't have too many doubts on this any further. What I do hope we don't have happen, though, is a constant stream of spoilers and over saturation of info, the likes of which, you know, Doctor Who fans have come to kind of expect before every season. Here's everything good about the season and go. But yeah, I think that if they can, there's no way they're going to be able to contain the hype train on this one, but if they can at least live up to even half of it, it's going to be exactly what we were looking for. Now, there was another trailer that came out, and I don't know if either one of you were able to see it, but this was the kind of half-leaked and then officially leaked, released, whatever you want to call it, Batman versus Superman.
Speaking of multiverse, damn it, Hydra!
Yes, exactly. Well done. Did you happen to get a chance to see this one, Bronstone?
I did catch this one.
And any thoughts on that at all?
The first thing that came to mind was the first thing that came to mind in the Star Wars one was like this is a teaser, like this is not meant to, this is not giving us anything substantial. It's just trying to maybe give us some basic imagery, set a tone. I'm not sure if it's failed to do that or if it succeeded at doing that and the tone is just not grabbing me. I've been cautiously optimistic about this movie for a while now, but this teaser just did nothing for me. It was either bizarre or lackluster, or I'm left wanting more in the bad way. Like, not in the, oh, that was great, I want to see more of that, but more of just like, huh? That needs some clarification. It didn't leave me optimistic. It didn't leave me going, cannot wait till this thing comes out.
Yeah, what I took away from it was that all of our speculation about what the plot might be around was kind of confirmed by this. and yet, I'm also struck a little bit by the amount of negativity that it seems to have generated. I could completely understand if it was a reaction like your own, Bronstone, because that's kind of where I was at, was that, okay, that's nice, it's pretty, it's what I expected it to look like. It didn't tell me anything else other than, you know, it kind of looks like it's going to do what we thought it would do. And that is follow up on Man of Steel and all the things that we thought were kind of, or at least that Gary really railed about. We were like, well, let's see if they follow it up on the next movie. Well, it looks like they are. Okay, good. Carry on. Show me something better next time. But there were some people that looked at it and just started ripping it to shreds. And I guess the question that I come away with both of these situations is they're teaser trailers that are really like, we had teasers for the teaser trailer to the true trailer that comes later. And yet we still have such enormous amounts of judgment being cast on the quality of a film that is still well away from coming out. I guess this whole thing is starting to – we have one example of, you know, very positive buzz that could easily kind of undermine the reaction to a film, and that's with Star Wars. It's almost on the same trajectory as Episode One in terms of the advanced hype. And then we have another movie that I feel like before – a franchise can even get off the ground, people are looking to kill it just based on what's in a teaser trailer. You know, is it a little too much too early? Is it, you know, the expectations of the audience now getting crazy?
Well, the Batman vs. Superman one isn't helped by the fact that there is, I think, automatically from moment one, there's this groundswell of negativity towards just the film on a fundamental level. There were a lot of people who came away from Man of Steel just really disliking it, disliking what it stood for, what it said about Superman and stuff like that. I wasn't one of them. I loved Man of Steel. I thought the third act was not as strong as the rest of the movie, but I thought it was a very, very smart reimagining of Superman. And one of the biggest things that has me cautiously optimistic about Batman vs. Superman is the idea of taking that further. But there was just so many people who you hear them talk about it and just like, oh, Man of Steel, oh, that wasn't Superman. That wasn't my Superman. That was some, you know, what the hell was that? That's nothing like what Superman's supposed to be like. It's like, yes, that's the point. You've seen the Superman that you want for yonks now. We're going to try something different. But there's just, yeah, so many people who are from the outset against it conceptually, but nothing that comes out in a teaser is going to sway them.
I don't think anything that comes out in full solid feature film form is going to necessarily sway them if they want to hate it that much. But I just don't know if it helps the cause any. I think they maybe were forced into putting something out, but there we are. I don't know. I'm with you on this one. I liked Man of Steel just fine. So, go ahead.
Yeah, the two most positive things that I came away from the trailer with, first one was just the idea of the false god. Just the how and why of people turning on Superman, which just strikes me as like, it's the filmmakers deliberately playing with the messianic imagery that has come loaded into pretty much every Superman movie since the first Christopher Reeves one. The whole idea of him being like this elaborate sort of Jesus biblical metaphor, and well, now there's people coming out and it's like, stop pretending to be Jesus. I just like, yeah, yes, that's an intelligent way to take the character. And the other thing, Batfleck looks good. Yeah. Like, I didn't see him and think, that's awful, what the hell? Like, I know it was only, like, a very short glimpse, and it was, like, shrouded in shadow and stuff like that, but it's like, no, he looked good. Like, you know, like, the film didn't give me a good sense of tone or anything like that, but just these couple of things just kind of stood out, and just like, yeah, that's pretty positive.
I think probably my final comment on this is going to be, for all the Sturm und Drang over this, all the hate that's being thrown out there, at least 99% of those people will be there on opening weekend. So, yeah. At the end of the day,
I just hope they go in with an open mind. Just you know, want to enjoy it.
Yeah,
yeah.
One with at least, yeah. If you're gonna pay the money to go and see it, just don't go in to find reasons to feel like you're
terrified.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, we're gonna go ahead and wrap this particular episode up, and when we come back next time, we will be covering the top three and the bottom three shows of the week. So stay tuned.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.